Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
You taking pot shots at Bigfoot?
No, I wouldn't dream of provoking Sasquatch.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Aliens.
This is More Like Ancient Aliens, a podcast about the only show that is willing to ignore everything we know and just let loose with a collective stream of consciousness, Ancient Aliens. I'm Toby Ball, creator of the UFO podcast, Strange Arrivals.
I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who, unlike the Sphinx, had his head buried in the sand and his body sticking out the top of the earth until it was uncovered sometime in the 70s.
Sounds very painful. And we are very happy today to welcome on the show journalist and podcaster Maggie Rahr. Maggie, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right, so we are doing today Season 9, Episode 2, The Mysteries of the Sphinx. It originally aired November 7th, 2014. On this day, the Disney animated movie Big Hero 6 was released. Eventually, it won an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. I'm not sure if this is like the sixth of the Big Hero series or whether there were six heroes.
I know, that's the name of the movie. There's only one. It's a good movie. It posits what would San Francisco be like if San Francisco looked more like Tokyo.
That's something I've thought about a lot.
And what if robots were balloons? Also very cute.
And robots were balloons and San Francisco was like Tokyo?
Yeah, he's like inflatable.
All right. Why are we watching and discussing this Ancient Aliens episode? Well, the Giza complex, which is like the Great Pyramid and two other huge pyramids, and then the Sphinx and some other stuff, is sort of the most iconic of the ancient alien sites. If we get around to talking about Chariots of the Gods at some point soon, it figures pretty prominently in that, which is kind of like the beginning of this whole thing. It's a movie from the 70s. And what is the thesis? The thesis is, what if everything we know about the Sphinx is wrong? It probably means we can be resurrected as celestial beings somewhere in the constellation Orion. Just hang in. We'll get to that.
I do have something to say that right off the top in the intro of the show.
Yes.
When it has the like phrases kind of spinning at the viewer. And the first thing that comes up is, who were they? Which I thought was really funny. Just like completely out of context. Who were they? It's like, what? What? Immediately. What are you talking about? Like, you've already lost me.
Well, they like to start off strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who were they?
The vagaries start early and continue for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
They really never know who they are. And in any given episode, it's up to you to decide.
I think it's kind of like preemptive credulousness.
Yeah.
It's like it's letting you know right off the bat. It's like, we're just going to pretty much buy whatever gets thrown out there. And so just go along for the ride.
And it presupposes that there is a they that
yes.
we need to figure out the identity of.
And gender inclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah, alien.
That's right.
There is more discussion of whether advanced aliens have sexual relations
Oh, God.
Than you would imagine on a show like this.
And I'm sure somebody believes that they have the answer, right?
Yeah, they think that, like, why would they?
Don't eat it.
You know? They probably just evolve right out of that stuff, which, I don't know. Not sure that's a bonus.
The kink of the extraterrestrials tends to be vats. Lots of stuff growing in vats, and then them looking at the things growing in vats sort of contemplatively. That's like foreplay. Yeah.
That's the go-to.
Yeah.
Arousal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's pretty sweet. So we're going to start off with this guy, Romy Romani, who is identified as an Egyptologist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but he seems like most of his background is actually in TV. He's a TV host, a documentarian. He's film produced and directed and been featured in more than 100 documentaries and has worked with the Discovery Channel, the History Channel, and National Geographic. So he seems like kind of a sort of TV Egyptologist, but he's on site. We learn about the Sphinx, which is 60 feet tall. I didn't realize it was quite this big. It's 60 feet tall. It's 240 feet long. It's about a half a mile from the largest pyramids in Giza. There are no inscriptions on it, and it's dated back to 2500 BC by historians. Continuing with the brief beginning of facts, there's a tablet, which is called a stela, that mentions, although I think some people call it a stela, but I don't think that's actually right, that mentions a pharaoh that lived 1,000 years later, and they call it the dream stela.
But this tablet, known as the dream stela, also tells the story of a pharaoh who came 1,000 years later, King Thutmose IV.
So far, not so bad. We hear about Thutmose IV, who had a dream that if he uncovered the whole Sphinx, because apparently at this time the Sphinx was covered up by sand up to its neck, he would be the new pharaoh. His father was a pharaoh, but apparently Thutmose was not in line to be his heir, but he pays attention to the dream. He clears the sand and he becomes king. So far, so good.
Follows in the family business. Listen, kid, that's right. You can find the feet of this thing, it can all be yours.
Yeah, you can be the pharaoh. And then things start to, our first little drip of BS begins. The stela mentions the flashing eye of the Lord in the story. And we get our first ancient astronaut theorist, frequent contributor William Henry, shows up and he says,
what is the flashing eye of the Lord? This sounds like some kind of technology that is in communication with the Sphinx or perhaps channeled by the Sphinx that could ensure the prosperity of Thutmose IV.
Those seem to be the two choices we have.
When they show the photos, it's like, here's the, you know, the first one that's like more of an oval or even looks like a little like genie lamp.
Yep.
And then when they show the disc, that is just like a perfect circle. They're not the same shape. They don't look alike, but it's like nobody could dispute. These must be the same thing. It's like,
yep.
Why?
You just have to understand that these are a simple and primitive people. So think about the fact that they're just living their lives out in the desert and some bright thing crosses the sky every single day and it leaves at the end of the day and it comes back the next day and that thing's magical. Therefore, they must be talking about something that's not the sun. Like they're bending themselves over backwards, trying to be like, this could not be the sun they were talking about. There's no way.
Yeah.
No.
A culture that is pretty obsessed with the sun is certainly not thinking about it in this respect. It's something else entirely.
But then also when they're like, could be a UFO, back to that in a minute, and then they never come back to it.
Well, yeah.
Did you notice that?
Aggie, you get it.
Where it's like, more on that later. But then they're like, fuck it. You know, like they don't ever come back to it.
Yeah. That's what happens on Ancient Aliens. It's part of the charm.
Okay.
All right. Then we get to like, I think this is actually pretty interesting, although they don't really spend much time on the interesting part. So Akhenaten, he was a pharaoh who changed Egypt briefly from a polytheistic society to monotheism, and he worshipped Aten, which is why he was called Akhenaten. And apparently this was fairly controversial. People didn't really like it. And after he died, there was like this not really that slow. They say it was kind of slow, but I think it's over the course of maybe a couple decades that polytheism is restored, and it's officially restored by Tutankhamun. And he was originally named Tutankhaten. And then when he changed from being monotheistic to polytheistic, he went from Aten to Amen, which was symbolic of that. And my understanding is that that's why he was buried with all these riches that eventually made their way across the United States on a tour in the 70s. It's because the people of Egypt were so psyched to be back to polytheism.
Right. The artist formerly known as...
Yeah, exactly. Tutankhamun. And I'm surprised they didn't weave that in there, because it seems like a pretty obvious thing to be like, well, you know, they had all these gods coming down and then this guy's pretending like they didn't exist.
Right.
And turn the people off or whatever.
Yeah.
So Akhenaten started off as Amenhotep IV, but changed his name when he changed the state religion. Aten was a disc in the sky, leading to the question, what else looks like a disc in the sky, Brandon?
The Frisbee. The Egyptians are well known for being Frisbee connoisseurs. And ultimate Frisbee was actually King Tut thing. They had a lot of free time and a lot of space on the sand, so they've just...
That's true.
...kicked the disc around, you know? Hacky sack, too, was very big.
Amongst the ancient Egyptians.
Yeah. They're big into that. Brandon's guy, David Childress, shows up and says...
Is it possible that the Eye of the Lord and the Aten disc are one and the same, and that they are, in fact, some kind of UFO spaceship that's hovering over Egypt as an eye in the sky and is guiding the Egyptian civilization?
Maggie, this is new to you because you're not an avowed watcher of the show. At this point in the program, how did you feel? And you're a journalist, so...
How I felt was like, okay, you know, we're revisiting facts that have been established by historians. So that's great. And it's like kind of a recap. Like, it's been a minute since I've thought at all about ancient Egypt. So I was like, okay, this is cool. Let me get a little recap. And then it reminds me of like somebody with a fixation, like there's a predetermined outcome. So it's like A plus B must equal 1,694. It must, like the flashing eye of the Lord or whatever it is. And this other not similarly shaped thing. It's like, therefore aliens. And I felt embarrassed is how I felt watching it. Mm. You know, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Making a lot of money to swallow that embarrassment.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better as we go along.
That's true. There was more of that. That was the first moment of feeling this way of many.
Yes. Robert Bovals, who wrote a book about the Sphinx, said the Sphinx is said to have been here since the quote unquote first time. This apparently is Zep Tepi, the time of Osiris. And then did you recognize Giorgio Tsoukalos? Did you recognize the guy with the hair?
From what?
He's a meme.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
He's memed all over the place. It's just one of those things where he's so eccentric looking.
Yeah.
That you could just put like almost anything beneath him and it seems kind of funny because he's there.
Right.
Anyway, but he's kind of the alpha of this whole thing. Like he's the guy who's, you know, he's the king of the ancient astronaut theorists.
Although the way Toby describes it, he says he's a meme, which would suggest that he started as a meme. And then somehow evolved into a human being for the show.
Yeah.
Translation, he's an alien.
He is a hybrid, probably, with that hair. So Tsoukalos shows up. He says the golden age of Egypt was 12,500 years ago, which is 8,000 years earlier than accepted Egyptian chronology. And it was a time when the gods mingled with men. I realize I wrote in my notes, mingled with me. Which might have been confusing.
At a cocktail party.
I meant to say men.
I mingle with the gods.
Yes. And I've got some stories.
Yeah.
Maggie, this is one of the, we have a number of tropes at Ancient Aliens. And one of them is, shit is older than you think. And here's an example of that. Somehow their argument depends on things being a lot older than they actually are, despite all the proof to the contrary. And somehow that then means aliens must have been here and nothing happened in between now and then. Although, you know, it's wild to think about, even if you accept the commonly held belief that the pyramids really were created 2,500 years ago, think about this. Cleopatra, right? She was ruled from like 51 to 30 BCE.
Yeah.
So Cleopatra actually lived closer to the time of iPhone. Yeah. Than she did to the pyramids, the construction of the pyramids.
Yes. Yeah. One of my kids actually told me that exact anecdote recently.
Well, that's about the level I'm working at.
But also one of my children came into the room while I was watching the episode and said, my 10-year-old, and said, that guy's insane, within like 8 seconds of watching it.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Does he want to come on one of these weeks?
Yeah, we should get my daughter on as the guest. He's pretty funny.
Ancient Phalians for kids.
Wait, there was another one here. I got to pull it up. I wrote it down. There was another quote. This guy's insane was the first one.
Yep.
And then the second was, this guy's delusional.
She'll go far in life with that attitude.
She left the room. She was like, I've had enough.
Not the first one.
That's the appropriate way to watch the program, though, is to come in and out of the room, preferably while doing chores and only half paying attention.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
So now we're introduced to Dr. Robert Schock, who we are told is a professor who lives in Cambridge, thus implying that maybe he teaches at Harvard, which is untrue. He teaches at Boston University, which is also a very good school, but most people have heard of Harvard and all that prestige. He is a specialist in vertebrate paleontology, and yet the thing he is best known for is the rain erosion theory of the Sphinx's age.
Yeah.
So he puts the Sphinx's age as at least 5,000 years, maybe more like 10,000. This is disputed by archaeologists and geologists. So he's getting it from both sides. It's a fringe theory. Apparently the accepted date owes to an examination of how Egyptian structures incorporated styles from earlier structures. And that's how they kind of figured out when the Sphinx was actually constructed. And it puts it no earlier than the reign of Khafre, who we hear about a little bit, but not in a way that was interesting enough for me to take a note about it. But Tsouklos is willing to believe it. And this is sort of an inflection point, I feel like, for the entire episode, because then it's just like, all right, so this thing definitely was created before 10,000 BC. That's sort of the critical piece for this whole thing.
Again, it doesn't ever actually explain why it matters.
Exactly. That it's like, no matter what, that thing's walking like a duck. It must be the aliens, right? It's like, it's okay. So clearly, because of this rain pattering, also that little effect that they did where it's like, it's raining on a stone. So sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy has invested so much of his career in like coming to this determination, but even so it's like, okay, sure, let's go along with this. It's got to be at least an additional 10,000 years old. But then he's like, so therefore aliens. There's no other line of thinking or documentation or anything.
What are you looking for?
Well, I guess
he's an ancient alien theorist.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to say is, what is it? It's like ancient astronaut theorist.
Oh, ancient astronaut theorist, yeah.
Suggest that's their favorite phrase. It must have come up like 9 times in this one episode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who are these people?
We've listened to this 30 times. We've probably heard that phrase 300 times.
Many people have suggested, it has been suggested that perhaps originally...
Some ancient astronaut theorists suggest...
Yeah, and if you watch enough of them, you'll see, like, there's ancient astronaut theorists who show up again and again and again.
It's just supposed to catch all that it's totally meaningless. It's like, sorry, are we supposed to know what that is? Or that it's, like, somehow deemed trustworthy?
No, it's not deemed trustworthy.
You know, like...
totally
that's
not.
That's how they're acting.
And it, what's funny is that, like, it is kind of like this sort of weasel way of, like...
Yeah.
Like, here are some dudes who are going to just talk about stuff. They're not experts. They're not scholars. They're theorists. No.
Which is like, basically, like, here's a guy who once had an idea.
Yeah. No, it's like every 16-year-old you got high with and was just like, hey, man, you know, it's...
Do you ever think about...
Yeah. It feels like this is that, but on the History Channel.
Yeah.
Deniability is high because they say ancient astronaut theorists believe X, Y, and Z. But these are the ancient astronaut theorists, right? So they have some deniability and that they're distancing themselves or alternately making it seem like this is a larger population than the people who are promulgating this on the show.
It's a good way to fuzz over the fact that it's not just two guys sitting around a bong in a basement.
Yeah.
Well, that would be another way of doing it. So then we get this very odd little segment with the Arab Spring. Yeah. And then the conclusion is basically that the Sphinx kind of like watches in silent, you know, whatever, as a silent observer.
They were trying to tie in that it's like, despite these fatal clashes, somehow the Sphinx remains standing. It's like they were in the city, kilometers away. And also the Sphinx is an enormous ancient statue. Is this suggestion that the protesters were going to down it somehow?
You know, I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be a stand-in for, like, all the conflicts that have occurred.
Right, like regional wars or whatever.
For thousands of years, and through numerous conflicts, the monument has remained unscathed. Except for the loss of its nose.
Beauval comes back and says that the nose was gone before Napoleon, supposedly was shooting cannonballs at it. And then Kathleen Coppins says that a Muslim leader who she does not identify had it vandalized because he thought it represented a, quote, dark god.
The dark underworld or whatever.
Yeah. This seems like strangely nonspecific for somebody who had as much time as they wanted to prepare for this.
Yeah.
Whose face is actually on the Sphinx? Is it Khafre? But the ancient astronaut theories think that the Sphinx predates the pharaohs. And this is the one place where I did agree with Giorgio Tsoukalos, which is, why is the Sphinx's head so freaking small compared to its body?
Yeah, no, that I think is fair. Totally. Yeah. You look at it and it's like something is off here.
Yeah.
If they could create this enormous structure, then why would they intentionally make the head look so stupid and like it doesn't fit, you know?
He's got a little pea head.
I think it's a good theory that it's like it once was in a different shape and then it was mutilated or shrunken down, but who knows what for what purpose or when. But I think it's a completely reasonable assumption that the head once looked different, that it would have matched the size of the rest of the statue, right?
Brandon's got some thoughts.
Well, I was trying to figure out based on what, right? Like, we did an episode about the Skinwalker and one of my favorite parts of that was them talking about this beast called the Skinwalker. And one of the talking heads said, Skinwalker's typically 6 to 7 feet. And you're like, oh, okay, that's reasonable. And then you have to remind yourself, wait, the Skinwalker, there's no typical about it. There's no scientific proof of this thing existing. It's not like, oh, well, you know.
It's a legend.
We've done a lot of research.
It's like Bigfoot or whatever. It's like Bigfoot must be at least 11 feet.
Right.
You know.
Bigfoot is typically about 10 feet, 6 to 10 feet.
So, oh, forgive me. My guess is 11.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine.
Well,
some of the taller ones. Yeah, and it depends. It's regional.
But I do remember thinking that even as a kid, when in our, you know, history book, when you get to ancient civilizations and then you see an image of the Sphinx, it's, I remember asking in class, like, what's up with the head?
Yeah. What'd your teacher say? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Yeah. So I don't know.
My point is, I don't know what the normal size of a Sphinx head would look like. Are y'all saying it looks weird just because the dimensions of the monument suggest that the head would be bigger?
Yes, I think so. And because you look at the precision with which the rest of the body is laid out in relation to itself, meaning like the paws are separated in this way or whatever the legs you want to call it. And in addition to like the length of it, it all seems to be quite symmetrical. And then to have this like whoop, little head, it just looks kind of funny.
Little pea head, yeah.
Like, why would they do that? If they had the capacity to build this extraordinary thing, then everything else appears to be in a realistic dimensional reality, then why would you make the head two or three times too small?
I thought maybe that it was like two separate projects, and when they melded them together, they're like, fuck. Like,
what do you mean? What would the first half be? Just the legs?
One group was doing the body and the other group was doing the head. And maybe somebody was using qubits and the other one was using, you know, whatever.
God damn it, Gary. What happened?
They're like, well, I guess this is what we got. Let's put it up there.
They met in the middle.
Yeah.
It happens.
Buval is getting a lot of camera time in this one. He suggests it was a lion. Coppins thinks it might be a representation of the constellation Leo for some reason. We don't have any context, and nor do we have any follow-up. And then they say there's no mention of the Sphinx in the Old Kingdom texts, which I think the Old Kingdom predates when the actual archaeologists think that the Sphinx was created, in which case it's not mentioned because it did not yet exist. But of course, that's not where we're going with this. Robert Temple, a British guy who visited the Sphinx and instinctively thought the body was not that of a lion, but of a dog, because of the way its back is not arched. It's sort of straight, and the way he believes a dog sits and not a lion. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, that was funny where he was like, it's clearly Anubis. And it's like,
yeah,
is it?
And there's only one dog it could be. That has to be Anubis. Anubis is a dog god who is the guardian of the sacred necropolis.
I think the other thing was that Anubis was always like pictured as a guy with a dog's head.
Yeah,
and now you got this full-on dog.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I do think that it's reasonable that the head was once larger.
Yeah.
And something, and that it was either modified or whatever. And then that was the result.
Maggie, one thing you can always, if you're an astute observer of Ancient Aliens, as we have become, you can sort of tell where you're at in the run of show season wise, because they get more money as the thing goes on for effects and whatnot. This one, what are we at? Season 9. So they're off and running. They've really got some money. So they, as you saw, they spend a lot of time doing these reenactments of like, here's what it looks like with a lion's head. And you sort of see it grow out of the existing picture. And then it gets whittled down.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff falls away. And then it turns into the head you see. And then it grows back up into the Anubis head, which I found very satisfying. And it actually was not bad depiction of here's what it would look like. And in that respect, that did sort of push your argument. They're like, oh, it does. I've got to admit, it looks better as a lion or as a dog. But, you know, at the end of the day, it felt like the ultimate conflict between cat people and dog people. You know, it's like what you see probably determines what you've got in your house. I see dogs. Yeah. I'm a dog owner. And Toby obviously only sees cats because he's a cat.
I only see cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a cat, too. And I'm also a cat person.
See? So for the listener at home, take a look at the different versions of it and tell us what you think. If you are a cat person or dog person, and which one you see, and we'll do some science on this. And if you see something else, keep it to yourself.
I don't want to be presumptuous. My thought about the whole thing is that it probably started off as somebody else's head, some previous pharaoh, and then another pharaoh was like, fuck this guy, we're putting my head on, just like we're going to do with Teddy Roosevelt and Donald Trump on Mount Rushmore.
You think it's going to be Teddy Roosevelt he takes off? I would think it would be
Lincoln,
probably.
You think Lincoln?
I think he'd replace Lincoln.
He was a Republican, dude.
Anyway, back to the aliens.
let's talk about some fun stuff. Ancient astronaut theorists believe that Anubis was a visitor from space, because of course they did. David Childress says Egyptians thought their gods were actual beings, which I feel like everybody has always thought their gods are actual beings. Any religious person, I don't think devout Christians look at Jesus as a metaphor or something. It's a strange thing to say. And then my favorite guy, David Wilcock, shows up and says, for some reason,
strange little blonde man.
Yeah. This guy
that looks like a giant child.
Yeah, exactly. And he's willing to say fucking just about anything. And
it was crazy.
He starts off, this is pretty...
It's like, oh, you're out there.
This is pretty low key for him. He says that Anubis was...
openly cited in Egyptian mythology as being an extraterrestrial.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, I wrote that down too. I'm like, again, show your work, sir. What do you mean openly cited? Like, as opposed to like, it was cited, but in a more secretive and elusive way.
It's bizarre. And then the whole idea that they were saying he was an extraterrestrial, I don't know.
You reminded me of the David Cross character in Waiting for Guffman.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Where he's in, oh my God, it's amazing. It's really, really funny. But he's like, there's a crop circle or whatever in a field in this town. And he's like, the temperature is always the same inside the circle or whatever. It's completely ridiculous.
I've been coming out to this landing site every day for 2 years to measure it. And here's the thing. The circumference and the diameter change by a few inches, yet the radius remains the same. I'll tell you another thing. Once you step inside this circle, the weather never changes. It is always 67 degrees with a 40% chance of rain. Always.
It is often cited that David Wilcock is 2 7-year-old boys in a trench coat.
Yes.
And what movie did Wilcock think he was based on him?
The Matrix.
The Matrix. Yeah. He thinks he was the model for the Matrix.
His ideas are the Neo.
Oh God. I mean, and then it's like, let's put that guy on TV.
He's on all the time.
No, he's on every episode.
I bet. He's the kook, man.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Before we get to the Osiris shaft, maybe Brandon, do you want to talk to Maggie about their work in the podcast field?
Yeah, Maggie.
Hello.
You live in Canada. Now, Canada
yes. Is
a place that has a proud journalistic tradition in a way that the United States used to and may for some time to come, but it seems a little bit more fraught. Agree or disagree? How's the journalism business in the nation of Canada?
I do think that as a result of your current president, I mean, it's undeniable that the media landscape has shifted intensely, you know, just even looking at like these lawsuits, right, which pose a tremendous, tremendous threat for journalistic integrity, that you can basically just dangle the threat of legal implications, even if they're not verified, even if it's total bullshit, but that it's enough of a big enough, it's a big enough stick to frighten people off. We are having our own challenges here as well, I would say, just as like an extended process of the very slow death of print and the lack of local representation. Just given, you know, Canada is so huge and geographically vast, and a lot of, I think, the most important reporting comes not from the big cities, although of course that's important too, but to have a sampling of different regions from across the country. And that's been really wiped out even since my time as I began, when I began as a top reporter like 20 years ago.
And then on top of that, some of your area of focus has been particularly in areas where people's stories are not being listened to. Tell us about Carrie Lowe versus.
Yeah. So I was a freelancer for, I guess it ended up being about 10 years. But because a lot of the stories that I wanted to do required, I mean, there was so much investment up front before anything would, at the time, I would say, find its home. So the Carrie Lowe story, I worked on for a full, almost 2 years before I got the contract with CBC.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, I would just do side hustles to like pay the bills, like research for documentaries or other kinds of, you know, print freelance, just local news coverage. Or, you know, I'd write book reviews for the Globe and Mail, the national newspaper up here and stuff like that.
So the way I was introduced to Maggie's work was the What Happened to Holly Bartlett podcast, which was fairly independent, right? How did that come around?
So I was approached by this local production company called Ocean Entertainment, and they do like recreation, kind of grisly murder stories that are often American. So it's just sort of like an outport for crime-based stuff that was like kind of skeezy. And then I was approached because they won a contract with AMI, which is Accessible Media Inc., which is honestly a really phenomenal organization that provides coverage for tailored around people with disabilities, and specifically television coverage that is created for people with vision and or hearing loss, which is really cool. So they were partnered with this local company, Ocean, to do the story of Holly Bartlett, who's a young woman who was blind, who was found clinging to life below a massive bridge here in the city in the winter, and who died not long after that. And because she was blind, and because she'd been at a party celebrating her end of year master's celebration, the police said, oh, well, she was blind, she was drinking. So they deemed it non-suspicious, basically, even though she was in a locked compound. And they surmised that she crawled through a hole in the fence. Anyway, I was approached by this local production company, and they were like, we need to have a woman, air quotes, to host the television show. And I was like, no, I don't do that. You know, I'm wrong number, basically. But if you want someone to help with research, I'd be more than happy to do that. And then they were like, well, come on in for a meeting. And then during that meeting, they mentioned that they were going to do a podcast. And I said, let me do the podcast. That was going to be like a pairing item. And then they said, okay, if you agree to be in the TV show, we'll let you do the podcast. So it was honestly kind of ideal because they basically had no interest or awareness about how a podcast works. And because I came up in radio, I'd been a radio reporter. I knew about how to write for a listener, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then nothing was vetted. Like, I had total control and I loved that.
Yeah, no, it was an incredible podcast.
Thank you. And honestly, I've been meaning to thank you, Toby, because when you gave us that shout out on Crime Writers On, one of your other podcasts, that was what gave us a massive boost in the American demographics and ended up leading to us getting like a shout out in Oprah magazine.
Yeah.
So thank you, Toby. Amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Waiting for Toby to give us a shout out that gets more like Ancient Phalians mentioned in Oprah magazine, but
yes,
still waiting.
Yeah. Oprah probably buys more of this stuff than we do.
I would think so. I mean, it seems well, that's a crime for another day.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maggie, you deal with some pretty heavy stuff, Carrie Lowe versus and what happened to Holly Bartlett, often crimes against women, sexual crimes. And as you were mentioning, and, you know, Toby also is in this space, the world of true crime at one time, very, very valuable, very popular, you know, pretty widespread, especially in the podcast space. And obviously, there's a lot of, I'm going to oversimplify here for the sake of this question, but there's a lot of variation on, you know, the point, let's say, of this kind of thing. In other words, some of it played more for entertainment and scaring ladies so they stay indoors. And then some of it like yours, which is justice has failed this person in this particular situation. And you then become kind of the last line of defense support for these stories. And so I wonder, you know, from your experience being in radio and then being independent, like, kind of what's your take on the face of true crime these days?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. I definitely think this is an important moment in time to consider it. So I believe very strongly that a lot of coverage, even just in news coverage, especially as it relates to vulnerable populations, sexual violation, And also just there is a gendered element too of like stories about women who have been murdered or attacked or who have suffered, that there is an extractive element in the telling of these stories that I think further harms the people at the center of them. So I observed this happening in my own career, just around me in the newsroom and in the general news environment, and wanted to contribute a different kind of storytelling that basically like pairs the rigor of good journalism and good investigations with just basically protecting human dignity for somebody who's already suffered so much. And my personal belief is that that's totally possible. So for instance, like when I was starting out and I would be reporting on, let's say, a case of an alleged rape, my news editors were always pushing really hard for, it's like, where was the location? To ask her, you know, asking all these really personal questions about the night of that are basically the cultural echo of shaming, of victim blaming. Or not letting them, for instance, this is another example, not letting them read the script before, which is usually like an extremely unethical practice. But it's like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in this person's life. I'm not showing them the script so that they can edit it or say, don't do that. But just so they know what they're going to be, what's going to be out there in the world, you know? And that doesn't injure my work journalistically. It doesn't interrupt my capacity to commit to good research and double sourcing and having everything backed up and documents. And so I was really on this mission to basically prove that there's a way to tell these stories. And I think in today's climate, there is more of that, especially in the space since Me Too. And also, I think because we're finally at a point where social media and Twitter, before it was an, you know, Nazi white supremacist cesspool, at least there was a more amplifying of voices that you wouldn't get to hear from. And that has definitely led to some of these stories. And I think that's wonderful. Not saying Twitter directly, but just that there was more of a less discrimination in amplifying stories from different communities that we usually don't hear from, or voices that we usually don't hear from. And so on the one hand, that's really cool. But I feel like as that has been rising, so too has the watering down, extractive, slasher, kind of dehumanizing storytelling. So it'll be interesting to see where this genre is in 5-10 years.
I guess what I find so interesting about it is, like, in both kinds of stories, you have this thing that's very unpleasant. It could be very triggering for people, whatever. But somehow one is just feels even more like entertainment, more, you know, just the framing of the story. Yeah. Like it's more impersonal somehow, or it's more, it skates over
totally
the emotional consequences of a crime or whatever it is. You know, I mean, like HBO is cranking them out.
You can tell in the first like 30 seconds, just even stylistically, you can tell if this is a story that's about making a real life event seem fictional and putting in all of the like lurid and like alluring details and points in the narrative, rather than honoring it as a real life event that had wide ranging impacts on the people at the heart of the story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it at the end of the day, is how much, you know, some stories are easy to peg because it's like, this is focusing on the killer, you know, because the killer is a serial killer or something interesting versus the victims.
Right.
Versus sort of what I think you're doing more. It's like focusing on, this is a human being, this is a thing that happened to them. And what's difficult and compelling is, I'm going to put you as much as I can, as much as everyone's comfortable with, into their life experience, into their head. And that's hard. You know, that's a hard thing to navigate.
Yeah. And then also examining the systemic failure that allowed this to happen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 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 It's a lot to juggle. It's a very impressive thing.
Oh, thank you.
We're glad you're doing it up there.
Yeah. There are people who do it sort of performatively.
Yes.
You know, and it's like a box to check off or a sort of stance you want to be associated with. And I would just say that, I mean, people should listen to either one of, or both, preferably, of Maggie's podcasts.
Thank you.
You know, that's how it actually should be done, right? It's not performative. It's very empathetic. And then also able to sort of interrogate the way that the state, essentially, you know, through the police or prosecutors and stuff, the Carrie Lowe versus, I think there was a fair amount about trauma-informed questioning or interrogation, right?
Yes.
And taking a look at how women are treated by the legal system in those situations.
Yeah, and there is a double-edged sword of like these responses becoming more common because then they can also be weaponized, right?
Yeah.
Like to this day, police here say all of our officers are trauma-informed. It's like, well, that's not reflected in
accounts
we're hearing about.
Yeah.
You know,
it's nice they've got a certificate in their desk, but at the same time, you got to like do it in the field, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And like your work, but much, much stupider, Ancient Aliens also concerns itself with marginalized and indigenous people.
That's right.
And also it's very, very dismissive of their stories.
Yes.
Just over a much longer time frame.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently 10,000 to 12,000 years
ago. They got a lot to tackle.
They do, yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Brandon, because now we're going to talk about the Osiris shaft, which I don't even know what to do with
it's
that.
It's such a gross new word pairing.
Yeah. It's not.
Osiris, it's so fucking gross.
Yeah.
The Osiris shaft.
Got to think for a few minutes.
Well, God.
Fortunately, to kind of bring down the sexy aspect of this, William Henry shows up to tell us that sarcophagus actually means flesh eater.
Yeah, that was.
The idea is that the sarcophagus box consumes the body that's inside of it. My boy David Wilcock says
it's like a magic trip.
This suggests teleportation and transmutation.
It is a suggestion, perhaps, that those who built that monument and those underground rooms could completely portal out of our reality entirely.
It's just
from deep underground, a natural consequence.
It's hard to even know where that comes from based on what leads up to it. But that's why you got David Wilcock.
That was a cool, I'm sorry to say it, guys. The Osiris shaft was pretty cool. He climbed down and down and down and down. They dug that thing way the hell in there. It was submerged in water. And, you know, that's the greatest gift you can give to an ancient astronaut theorist is an empty sarcophagus in a cool underground chamber. Because if there's nothing in it, it means, obviously, it's a teleportation chamber.
Yep.
That is just as clear as can be.
Or transmutation.
Yeah, that was another line that comes up a lot is one has to wonder, and literally yell, no, we don't.
Yeah.
But you do have to wonder.
Yeah.
That's David Childress. I mean, that is his stock and trade.
You have to wonder.
I found the 10 stories below Earth chamber terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm claustrophobic. You could pay me to go down there. Have fun.
Yep.
See you never.
Well, in that case, you're going to miss out because William Henry says the Sphinx is the gateway of a teleportation machine to a planet in the Orion constellation. So, you know, I guess you got choices to make.
You're lost, Maggie.
Yeah. Childress then states that no mummy has ever been found in a pyramid, which is not technically true. I think he's mostly talking about the big Giza pyramids where they actually have not found mummies, but they were so heavily looted throughout the centuries that the mummies were probably taken out.
And there are accounts of a bunch, right?
Yeah.
If not on that one, then like the other pyramids or somewhere.
In smaller pyramids, they've been found.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just generalizing, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's the least of the sins.
As they just said about the Osiris shaft, a lot of the pharaohs had crypts that were not in the pyramids at all. They were over in these other places.
Yes.
Like King Tut, I think, was buried in a cave, or, you know, like dug out of a cave. Like, they have choices.
Yeah.
They don't need to be buried in the pyramid.
Well, the other thing about it, though, is that pyramids might be power plants for the stargates and part of the resurrection scheme.
That was crazy. At one point, there was like the glowing blue imagery, and they didn't explain it at all. That it just, the pyramids light up like they're being, you know, lit from within by nuclear power or something. And then the graphic just disappears. And they never address what the illustration was. Like, it's so crazy. It's so far-fetched and stupid.
Well, there are entire episodes that are dedicated completely to are the pyramids actually power stations?
Who were they?
Yeah, exactly. Where did they come from?
Why are they here? Or whatever.
What is this?
Then there's some weird shit about the pyramids being laid out like Orion's belt. And then this guy, Bouval, does some calculations about a pyramid shaft and the stars and dates the pyramid at around 10,000 BC. So you've got that number again as they're starting to like kind of build their little argument. And then as Brandon, I'm sure, clocked while he was watching this, we get to Edgar Cayce, who, Maggie and listeners, if this is your first time, I had when I was in second grade and I was in like this like little freaking gifted and talented program thing. Our teacher was this like student teacher who was 100% into Edgar Cayce. So as a second grader, I was exposed to a lot of Edgar Cayce stuff in a classroom in a public school, which is strange. So it does sort of, he sort of has this weird place in my mind of like, of just being totally confused as a young child about what was going on.
Yeah. The great works of Edgar Cayce from grade two, word in the life of young Toby Ball.
Yeah, exactly. Are you familiar with Edgar Cayce?
No. And when this came up, I was like, oh my God. Okay. So yeah, the idea that he was a psychic, right?
Oh yeah.
Who announced to everyone that he was actually a high priest of ancient Egypt, of fucking course, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey guys, I'm unlocking the secrets of the universe, but just so you know, I happen to be a king from another time. And then there was some other thing about how it's like, he also claimed that he was directly linked to the pharaohs. Sure, Jan.
Well, if you're going to be reincarnated, you don't spend a lot of time like thinking about yourself as like, yeah, man, I was a beet salesman. What happened in your life? I mean, not fucking much.
Yeah.
Beets?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then I died. Yeah. Then now I'm back. No, everybody was Cleopatra, you know, and that's the joke.
Yeah. It's not like my name was Mary and I lived in a garret in a town that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah. Or you just hauled freaking huge stones up the pyramid for 40 years and then
several hundred years.
Yeah. So, yeah, as Maggie was mentioning, Edgar Cayce claimed that he was an ancient Egyptian priest in a previous life. He also claimed that the Sphinx was built around 10,500 BC. David Wilcock has a strong feeling that this reading was accurate. Cayce claims that the Sphinx has something to do with Atlantis. It may have been more specific than that, but I didn't take a note about it because it was probably stupid. Then Wilcock says Atlantis, quote, as reported by Plato, as though Plato was on the Atlantis beat back in the day, and that Cayce, quote, leaked info he had from his past Egyptian life in Egypt into his books.
Yeah, the leaked was a strange word choice.
Yeah, actually, almost all of his words are strange word choices, given whatever context.
He has to remind us at every turn that there's some conspiracy, that there's a disclosure that's happening. You always have to sort of, you know, keep simmering the pot of like, there's a truth that's being hidden from you. Yeah. There are various visionaries who are revealing that to us.
That's how you keep them on the hook.
Yeah.
Tsouklos says that Atlantis was around at the same time as Egypt's golden age, which neither one actually existed, so it's hard to tell. Cayce dreamed that there was a secret chamber under the right paw of the Sphinx that holds the records from Atlantis.
All of records.
This thing is interesting, too, because it's like, okay, so a city is drowning, but there's a shared effort to save the records.
Right.
It's like, if that's your top priority while you're dying, then why are you fucking hiding the records in a secret chamber?
Yeah. In Egypt.
You're saving them to bury them in a location so no one can ever know the information therein. Like, that is crazy.
It is at least, unlike a lot of stuff in Ancient Aliens, it's at least specific. Because sometimes it'll be stuff where it's like, on the backside of Mars, there is a temple. Well, we can't do anything about that. But in this case, Cayce's very specific. If only someone can drill under the right paw of the Sphinx, we'll get the truth. It'll be revealed. And then people did. Yeah. And there was nothing under there. And yet the show put it all together anyway.
Like there were some anomalies, Brandon. Let's keep that in
There were some anomalies.
Yeah, well, they were stopped just when they felt they were getting close.
They were so close. Yeah. So very close. Yeah, I liked that they have John Van Auken.
Yeah.
The guy who's the director of the Edgar Cayce Foundation is the one who actually comes on to sort of vouch for Edgar Cayce's like being like legit. Anyway, this is all nice, but the question that I'm sure everybody's asking is, could Atlantis' records actually be on Mars?
Mm-hmm. One must wonder, when will Mars enter the picture?
And they've had some good graphics of the Mars rover landing on Mars. So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever seen these photos of Mars where they like look at stuff and they're like, oh, that looks like the Sphinx. That looks like pyramids.
You mean the pile of rocks?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a long rock.
That made me feel sad. That made me feel guilty for laughing.
You don't have to feel guilty.
That fucking thing that's behind like a gentle rift in the land.
Yeah.
Guys.
Maggie, let me ask you this. Looking at that picture of the alleged Sphinx on Mars, did you think that its head looked too small? And you have to be honest.
I honestly was just like, that is a pile of rocks.
That's you dodging the answer is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. But that does not stop some speculation about whether the Martian Sphinx was built by aliens.
No, yeah, no, it's like highway to Mars.
Yeah.
That's where they came from, and that's where they got to go back. You know, you can just nip in and out.
Well, the Sumerian myths said the Anunnaki traveled between Mars and Earth. And Jason Martell asks, maybe, or he doesn't even ask, he just says, maybe it's fact.
He's getting into the state of mind where one must wonder.
Yeah, he's almost certain, I think. Childress does wonder, or he asks us to wonder, or thinks that we have to wonder.
Does you, Toby, have to wonder?
I personally wonder, is the Martian Sphinx guarding an underground world like the one in Giza? Again, I don't feel like we've established that there's an actual underground world in Giza. It sounds like there's the Osiris shaft and maybe some other stuff, but there's not an underground world.
That was a bit of a late breaking theory.
That's not the latest breaking theory, though, because that is the possibility that there is a second Sphinx.
Which is like to their point where it's like everything is symmetrical. There's always two figures, right? And all these artistic representations of life in ancient Egypt and reflecting their belief sets and whatever. It's like, so wouldn't the other Sphinx like be around in a location that we can see?
Yeah, there's not two. No. There's not two fucking great pyramids. Like those are all one-offs.
That's like a decorative flourish, if you will.
Well, I think some of these guys just like saw ancient aliens were like, I can write a book and get on this thing and probably sell some copies. And somebody came up with that. William Henry says that the Sphinx is the key to understanding the power of the Great Pyramid, which would allow us to be resurrected as celestial beings.
Sure.
Amazing if true.
Okay.
I don't know what head you'll have when you're resurrected.
That's true.
But you'll come back.
It might be a tiny little head.
Your head, you just come back and your head is shrunken down. Yeah.
Like the one character in Beetlejuice.
And then everyone in the future argues about why.
What's wrong? So you used to have a dog head and somebody carved you out? And then the final little bit is Bufal gets his curtain call and he says he will go to his grave, essentially, believing that it's all a cipher that he personally has decrypted as saying, I have knowledge of our genesis. Uh-huh. Brandon, is that Peter Gabriel Genesis or is that Phil Collins Genesis, do you think?
It seems like a very Phil Collins Genesis.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Maybe just Phil Collins. I could feel it coming in the air tonight. So hold on. Hold on.
It's giving...
Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
When you say it as spoken word, it's hard.
It's giving, take a look at me now. It's giving against all odds.
Against all odds. That's right.
Oh my God. I feel like I have to apologize to our listeners for this interlude. but that's it. We made it. We made it through the mysteries of the Sphinx.
Maggie, how do you feel about having been dredged through that Osiris shaft of nonsense?
I feel reassured that the both of you are echoing my sentiments of this is fucking ridiculous. Having said that,
yes,
I don't deny the existence of aliens, nor would I pretend to have enough information to rule anything out. Where do you guys sit on that?
I don't know. I did 3 seasons of a podcast where I was pretty skeptical. I don't think so.
Like life outside of our galaxy, that's a pretty crazy thing to be like, absolutely not, you know?
I think there's life out there. I don't know if they've actually visited us. Like, wouldn't there be any evidence at all?
I don't think that there's some enduring secret relationship involving planet Earth. But I think that there's probably, I think the possibility that there's life elsewhere in space or in other galaxies is very high.
I think it's almost impossible that there isn't.
Right.
I mean, there's so many, I mean, the universe is just so.
I don't know how that supposition, which makes a lot of sense to me, got turned into they have green alien bodies and their heads are this weird shape and that everyone's kind of sticking to that and that they have this secret relationship with us. I think that that's just a very sad fixation on self. that would lead one to believe they must be secretly obsessed with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This episode, you really get the full muddle of what, you know, stands in for a theory in favor of actual argument. And that is the Ancient Aliens experience. So congratulations.
Got it.
You carry that with you forever now.
I intend to.
Maggie, where can people find you?
I'm on Blue Sky, I guess. Just Maggie Rahr. You can hit me up there.
And that's Maggie, R-A-H-R, Maggie Rahr.
You got it.
This has been More Like Ancient Aliens. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
See you next time. And please, remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We need all the love we can get.
All of it.
So that we can keep spreading the good word about the bad word of ancient aliens.
Next time on More Like Ancient Aliens. Bigfoot has many names. Sasquatch, Skunk Ape, Yeti, and so on. But is he an alien, or at least a hybrid? Yeah, probably. We look at Aliens and Bigfoot, Season 4, Episode 7. We talk about the $6 million man, the Earth possibly being a penal colony, and of course, the Book of Enoch. Also, are we humans actually the terrifying alien hybrids? Dude, see you next week.
More Like Ancient Aliens is a Grab Bag collab production. Our producer is Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and our music is by Nathan Reedy. And you know, you can find Aliens episodes and a whole bunch more early and ad-free over at www.grabbagcollab.com. Again, that's grabbagcollab.com. Folks can subscribe directly to Aliens or bundle a few shows or just get them all. Go over there and check it out.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, R-I-T-E-R-U-G.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.